I want to ask, in how many languages does the garden paths occur? I guess. because I started to think that, first of all, in English they don't use almost any either punctuation marks.
Yeah. Yeah, somebody else asked me this question. These are done so that people can guide us.
Mm-hmm.
So the examples that I show in class are done in such a way.
I don't know any other languages.
French and Russian. They occur in French and they occur in Latin. They are, universal.
Well, but in the languages where they have information, so that they have, for example, where changes from my goal and your goal is different.
You can still do a garden path, but not with the same constructions, with other things, right? I'll ask a question in class about this. Okay, hello, can you hear me? Can you hear me? Oh God, I have to speak like that now. What if I put it there? Can you hear me now? Kind of? Okay, good. I'll try to speak like that. Hello, how are you? Okay, so take your seats perhaps, because we're about to start. Okay, so today it's lecture number 2 on human parsing. So, and the lectures are structured so that they mirror what we did with the machine parsing. So we have machine parsing with our probabilities. Now we have human parsing without and with probabilities. So, and of course, there is a huge literature, which I'm not going to go into, but if you carry on in this university and in this school, in the fourth year, there is a lot of courses about this, and there is a lot of evidence that the human processor uses probabilities, and that we're all probabilistic. And not even that, there is a school of thought that claims that we are Bayesian. So that, not only do we use probabilities, but we have expectations about what will happen and what not. So there is no surprise that in human parsing, probabilities come in and that we use them to make predictions or to disambiguate. So today's lecture will focus on point number 2, which is the probabilistic model here. The first bit is revision from Tuesday, in case some people were absent or asleep. So we're going to revise a bit the garden paths and the parser architectures. Then we're going to move on to the probabilistic model. And then we'll show how you can tweak this model to actually represent what happens in human data. And this is pretty much how it goes in psycholinguistic research. You have some data, you have some idea, you have a model, and then you change the model so as to fit the data. It's not the other way around. You have a model and you make the data fit your model, obviously. Now, here, how many of you are you aware that the system in informatics was down? Or maybe it didn't affect you guys? Okay, so today I've had a terrible day. You cannot believe. I come to work and I have like deadlines, left, right, and center, and the system is not working. I can't even log on. And when you log on, you have no home directory. So anyway, there was like this big thing, the system was down. Why am I saying this? The reading list here is wrong. So I will update it on the web page. ignore. If you've printed that version of the slides or whatever, this doesn't hold. So I will update it, but I didn't have a chance to do this because the system was down. Okay, so in this lecture we will discuss a classic probabilistic model of human parsing. So it's coincidental that it's probabilistic. What you need to take from this is that it's a model of human parsing, and it's classic in a sense this was the first of its kind that people came up with to model garden path sentences. Nowadays, things have changed a lot, and they've become more complicated. And you may not be surprised to know that context-free grammars are no longer the trend in psycholinguistic processing. People use much more advanced grammar formalisms, such as tree adjoining grammar, that are mildly context-sensitive. Anyway, this was the first of its kind, and it's actually interesting to illustrate how it works. And it has several features. First of all, it integrates lexical and syntactic information, which is as it should happen, because the sentences are not about the tree, but also about what we say, that is, the words. It accounts for probabilistic psycholinguistic data using several concepts that we've seen in the course, such as context-free grammars. We haven't seen so much about Bayesian modeling, but it claims it does this. We won't talk about this in this course. And frame probabilities, which I haven't introduced, but I will be introducing today. And mainly, we will be talking about syntactic disambiguation. Okay, let's go back to the garden path sentences that we all know and love. Now, I have a question for you guys that one of you asked me just before class began. Are garden paths universal? Do they happen across all languages, or are they a problem that English only has? What do you think?
Universal.
Yes, they are universal. So you may not have the exact same garden paths, but you can construct sentences that will make the human processor garden path, i.e., they will make the human processor believe the wrong analysis for a sentence. Then processing will break down, you will have to backtrack and reanalyze it. So garden paths have been studied. They are the one phenomenon that have been studied across very many languages throughout the years, since the 60s. The first garden path sentences were observed in the 60s. And it's a well-established fact in psycholinguistics that they do exist. Now, the grammatical structures may vary from language to language, which is, of course, expected. So let's go here and look at this first. The sentences under one were like the prototypical, the first garden paths that people ever studied. And there are things like the horse raced past the barn fell. The teachers taught by the Berlitz method passed the test. The children taught by the Berlitz method passed the test. So you understand the difference between B and C. In sentence B, the teachers taught by the Berlitz method. Once we've heard the teachers taught, we expect an object. The teachers teach something. Just because teachers are most likely to teach them rather than being taught. The children, on the other hand, poor children, are most likely to be taught by someone. So we don't garden path in the last sentence, but we do in the first one. So this is called main clause versus reduced clause ambiguity, a reduced relative ambiguity. So here, the ambiguity is the horse raced. Here, this is the main clause, so because usually horses race. That's what they do. This is the main clause. And when we garden path, we get the other interpretation, the other meaning, which is someone raced the horse, i.e. this is the relative clause here. So this is a reduced relative. It reduced because if we weren't reducing it, we would say the horse that raced past the barn fell. But we are reducing it, and therefore we drop the that, and it's reduced. It is rendered like raced. So this is one category of garden path sentences. The other ones have to do with frame ambiguity. And frames are characterizations of the arguments a verb take. What can be the subject and the object of a given verb? And verbs take different kinds of arguments and may have different frames. So here, the landlord painted all the walls with cracks. In the first sentence, could people tell me what is the cause of the ambiguity? It has to do with the verb paint. So what are the two readings of this sentence? Yes?
Using cracks.
Right. So the two different readings is I am painting the wall with some cracks, so I use the cracks, versus I paint the wall that has cracks. And the ambiguity arises because paint can have two frames. One frame is I paint something, period, I painted the wall, versus I paint something with something, I painted the wall with a brush, would be the canonical reading, but here we are painting the wall with cracks. The second sentence, Ross baked the cake in the freezer, similar idea, we are baking something, I baked a cake yesterday, versus I baked a cake in the oven. This is a normal reading. No one bakes cakes in the freezer. They wouldn't bake, presumably. Unless we use freezer to refer to the fridge. To the stove, sorry. So, right. Okay, and here's a note. This means garden. The question might mean garden path, but you have figured that already out. Now, a third category has to do with lexical category ambiguity. And these are my favorite ones. So, let's look at the first sentence. The complex houses married and single students and their families. If I read it like that to you, it's completely incomprehensible. What this means is the complex houses married and single students and their families. So the complex houses married and single students and their families. Can somebody tell me what the sources of ambiguity are here? And there isn't not a single one, there's two.
Complex and houses.
Can you tell me what exactly, why do we garden path?
Because complex can be sort of noun or adjective, or houses as a noun or verb.
Good, exactly. So complex could be, I'm a complex character, an adjective, or this is a complex house, could be architecturally complex. And house could be, informatics 2A houses a lot of students, means that we have a lot of students, versus there are a lot of houses in the street. And all the other examples are quite similar, such as the warehouse fires destroyed all the buildings. So fires here could be the noun fire or the verb fire. The warehouse fires a dozen employees each year. So here the warehouse is some sort of organization that will fire. They will lose their job. The prime number few, so here number is the problem. Because number could be either a verb or a noun, and similarly prime could be a noun or it could be an adjective. The old man, the boat, old can be either a noun or an adjective, man can be a verb or a noun. I cannot read this sentence, and I've read them several times. The grappling hooks onto the enemy ship. So here, hooks could be a verb or a noun, and grappling, similarly, could be a verb or a noun. Okay, so what I want you to take from this is that we have three sources of garden paths: main versus reduced relative clause, lexical category ambiguity, and frame ambiguity. Now, as I said before, a verb can have several subcat frames. These are phrases it goes with. And some frames are preferred over others. Okay, now we're think probabilistically. Look at sentence 4. The women discuss the dogs on the beach. What does this sentence mean? So, these guys up there, you guys never speak. Why? Is it the distance? I never get any comments from up there. It's like whenever I teach a class, year in, year out, the guys who sit up there never say anything. Okay, so there is two interpretations here. Interpretation number one, the women discuss the dogs on the beach, the dogs that were on the beach, because they are very aggressive, right? And we are on the beach and we're walking, and I'm discussing with this other woman about these dogs that are on the beach and they're troublesome. It could be that me and my friend are discussing the dogs while being on the beach. So we're walking and we're discussing about dogs and about, you know, how we like grooming them or feeding them or having them in our bed, whatever. Okay, now, which interpretation do you guys think is more likely? The interpretation where the dogs are on the beach or the interpretation that me and my friend are on the beach? So I want to see a show of hands. Which is more likely, the dogs are on the beach or the women are on the beach? Let me see the dogs. Where are the women? Oh dear. Okay. The people have done this experiment. 90% say that the dogs are on the beach. 10% say that the women are on the beach. Okay. Now, let's look at sentence 5. The women kept the dogs on the beach. Now, are the women on the beach or the dogs?
Both.
It could be. Could be, but this is not really the case. So, the women kept the dogs on the beach. 5%. So, it's the reverse. The inverse. The women kept the dogs which were on the beach is very unlikely. Versus the women kept the dogs while on the beach is more likely. So, this shows us that these two sentences have similar syntactic structure. Nevertheless, the fact that we have different words leads us to different preferences. So it's not only is the case that we have different subcategorization frames, but the way that these frames are realized introduces different biases. Now, do you have your clickers ready? While you're getting them ready, let me read the sentence for you. Which one? Now this was the introductory bit. The next part of the lecture is going to be as to how we're going to model this. But before talking about the modeling, let me see if there's some moderate understanding of the following. Which one of these questions following is not a plausible architecture for a human parser? Not a plausible architecture. A serial parser maintains only one analysis at a time. A parallel parser maintains several analyses. A parser that computes analysis sentence by sentence. A parser that combines serial processing with limited parallelism. And your time starts now. Let me see which one is correct. Okay, so most of you think that a parser that maintains several analyses is not a plausible architecture for a human parser. Now, why so few of you have gotten clickers today? You forgot them at home? Usually we get, well, I guess it's spread. I guess it's the same number, but okay, let me explain. Right. A serial parser maintains only one analysis at a time. This is not so bad. That would mean the least memory that we have to commit not that many resources to the processing part. So this is a plausible architecture. A parallel parser that maintains several analyses is not that bad either because Okay, if there's 500 million analyses, we can't do this, but there is evidence that we have some form of parallelism. Like we can at least keep two or three things in our head. A parser that computes analysis sentence by sentence is definitely out for human processing because we do not produce an analysis sentence by sentence, we produce analysis word for word because we are incremental. It's not even clear that we humans actually interpret things that are spoken to us by what grammarians mean is a sentence. So normally in parsing what happens, the parser will give you when you have a full stop an analysis of the sentence and we'll move on to the next sentence and to the next sentence. This is how we implement parsing. But in real life, we actually compute analysis word for word. So if I say, I am, so we would do computer analysis for I, then we would incorporate am for blah, blah, blah. So three is definitely not a plausible architecture for a human parser. Four is actually what happens in reality. It's a parser that combines serial processing with limited parallelism. So in that sense, parallel and serial, the debate, as far as I'm concerned, I mean, there's like tons of literature on this topic. It's really a non-debate because clearly it's a bit of both. And if you have a parser that models the human data faithfully, then it is much less relevant whether it's parallel or serial. But we don't have this parser. I mean, we do, but we don't really because human data is messy. Okay. Let's move on. Why doesn't this go away? Okay. Right. So let me revise the architectures for you. So a serial parser will build parse trees through successive rule selection. So we read the words and we select the rules for the grammar, one by one. Now, and here's the trick. If more than one rule applies, so if we have ambiguity, we will choose one possible tree based on a selection rule. So we will have some heuristic to choose one tree. If the tree turns out to be impossible, then we return to the choice point. So we will go back at the point where we actually made the choice. We will backtrack and reparse from there. And here's an example for a selection rule, minimal attachment. So we will choose the trees that has the least nodes. And this makes sense, cognitively speaking, because there is this principle of least effort, which I'm sure lots of you apply in your life and everywhere, which is, you know, we don't need to compute very many big trees. We will go for the smallest tree. It's a heuristic. See what happens. If this doesn't work out, we'll go back. So this is the serial parser. What will the parallel parser do? We will build parse trees through successive rule selection again. So we select the rules. When more than one rule applies, we will create a new tree for each rule. So we create several trees. We pursue all possibilities in parallel. If one of these possibilities turns out to be impossible, we just drop it. But we maintain the other possibilities. Now, of course, there's a problem, as many of you will realize. The number of parse trees can grow exponentially. The longer the sentence, the longer the parse trees, and this will grow out of hand. The solution that people use in psycholinguistics and in NLP in general is what we call bounded parallelism. Only pursue a limited number of possibilities. So we will prune the trees somehow. For example, we will only keep the most likely ones and get rid of the rest. So we don't grow the number of possible trees exponentially. We keep a constant number in our memory or in our buffer or in our beam. This is technically called a beam. And the beam can have a width. And presumably, we have a small width. And this is the bounded parallelism idea. And the model we will see in this lecture uses this idea of bounded parallelism. OK. Now, what does it mean to have a serial parser versus a parallel parser as far as the garden path sentences are concerned? In terms of the serial parser, garden path means that we select the wrong tree at the choice point. So we will backtrack and we will have increased processing time. When we are dealing with a parallel architecture, the garden path means that we've pruned away, we've dropped the correct tree. So once we go and we realize that, hey, this is not the right interpretation, we have to backtrack, we have to reconstruct the tree that we dropped, and this causes increased processing times. So these are two different ways of implementing the fact that when we read a garden path sentence, there is increased processing difficulty. Now, this one we're talking about, Juravsky 1996, and this guy is the author of your book. Can I see how many people have bought the book? What are the rest of you doing? So I read one of the reviews and the evaluation form you filled in kindly, those of you who have filled them in, and said there was this question, I need to, what can I do to help myself, basically? And one of you wrote, buy the book, which I thought was very funny. Anyway, so Juravsky, who wrote your book, started from psycholinguistics. In fact, he has a very interesting trajectory in his career, and he's a lovely guy. He's actually a friend of mine, lovely. If he was here, you would be laughing. He's also doing stand-up comedy, and he plays with Woody Allen in New York. No, I'm not kidding, seriously. He has this trumpet, and he plays, Woody Allen has this group, and he's joined this group, and he has played with him. He's really very nice. And he does NLP, which comes to show you that NLP is cool. So if you do NLP, you may get to meet Woody Allen, if he's alive by then. Okay, so Juravsky assumes bounded parallelism in a parsing model, which is based on probabilistic context-free grammars. So we know what PCFGs are. I've explained to you what bounded parallelism is. And now we're going to see how we do this. And the main idea is that pruning occurs if a parse tree is sufficiently improbable. And he has a beam search algorithm, which I'm not going to give to you. Okay, now I'm assuming everybody in class is familiar with PCFGs. This is like two slides on what they are. But you should know this stuff by heart. So very simple, we have a context-free grammar, and the rules have probabilities. The probabilities of all rules with the same left-hand side sum to 1. The probability of a parse is the product of the probabilities of all the rules applied in the parse. Here's a grammar, and here are the probabilities, okay? We're talking about astronomers, ears, stars, instead telescopes. Here's one structure for the sentence, astronomers saw stars with ears. In this structure, the stars have ears, okay? So I have my telescope and I see this star which has ears. It can happen. And you see how you work out the probability of this tree here. You just multiply the individual rules. There is a second interpretation. Astronomers saw stars with ears. So the astronomers saw the stars using their ears. Okay? And, of course, this is much less improbable. So because the previous analysis is more probable, we will keep that one. And this one we will prune in the Juravsky model, OK? Now, the Juravsky model has two basic components. Well, three, but two are the important ones. One is the rule probabilities that I've shown you. And the second one is frame probabilities. So what are the arguments that keep goes with? Let's look at this example here, okay? So keep can have several different ways of realizing its arguments. Keep the price is reasonable. Here it's an adjectival phrase. Keep his foes guessing. So we have a noun phrase and a VP. Foes is the noun phrase and guessing is the VP. Keep their eyes peeled. Their eyes is the noun phrase and peeled is the VP. Keep is particularly bad. It's chosen on purpose to show you how many different syntactic structures a verb can have. Keep the people in, so you have a noun phrase and a participle in here. Keep his nerves from jangling, so a noun phrase and a prepositional phrase. And what Juravsky said is, look, we have the PCFG, And we can also take into account the fact that we have these frames, and the frames can have probabilities. And the probabilities will indicate how likely it is to have this structure on top of the PCFG. So this information, so the frame probabilities, can be combined with construction probabilities. And what he calls construction probabilities are really the probabilities of the PCFG that you use to construct a tree for a sentence. And then once you combine them, you have multiple evidence for a given reading or for a given structure of a sentence. And this, if you think about it, makes sense in the sense that, okay, we have the rules of our PCFG, but on the other hand, a given verb, like I said in the beginning with a lovely example of dogs that you all like, a given verb has preferences for given syntactic structures. So we want to keep that in mind when we are analyzing these things. And combining these two will give us a parser that will be able to model human data. Okay, so now here's the problem. Where are we going to get these frame probabilities? One answer would be to do experiments, and people have done in the past, which means I'll take all of you, and I will give you sentences like the dogs, and I will tell you, do you think this is more likely than that? And you will give me your intuitions, and then I will count your answers, and these are more probabilities. But this is not what we will do. We will use a corpus that is annotated with tree structures, such as our beautiful pen tree bank, and estimate the probabilities from the corpus. So here we have the frame probabilities for discuss and keep. And as you can see, I discuss the topic is much more likely versus I discuss about something. So this is the NPPP frame versus the NP frame. And keep, in the previous example, so this is much more likely, keep the price is reasonable. XPPRED is the adjectival phrase, if you like. It's a predicative in linguistics. Versus I keep something, which is much less likely. And we can obtain these probabilities from the pen tree bank. Now, how do we model the? How does the modeling of the frame preferences influence what our model would do given a sentence? So we have the example of the dogs again. Keep the dogs on the beach. Now, this is the reading where the dogs are kept with us. So we keep on the beach the dogs. So the dogs we keep them on the beach. So this is the VP reading. Now, if we look at this probability of this tree, we just multiply the probabilities of the individual rules and assume that the VP goes to V, NP, and PP has a probability of 0.15. The frame here is keep, the verb, followed by a noun phrase and an XP, a predicative phrase. This is on the beach. Keep the dogs on the beach. This is quite likely. So if I multiply 0.15 with 0.81, I get 0.12, which is the preferred reading, the reading that people prefer. Contrast this with the other reading, I keep the dogs on the beach. So the dogs are on the beach already. So here, this frame, whereas we have just the noun phrase, is less likely. And if we multiply it with all the other rules of the grammar, we get a less likely tree structure, which is dispreferred. So by modeling this problem, Jurafsky managed to model what actual real people's intuitions are about these sentences. They tend to prefer the dogs in the first reading where the dogs are not on the beach versus the second reading. Let's look at discuss, the same idea. We are discussing the dogs on the beach. Now, in this case, discuss with an NP and a PP is not very likely, so it's 0.24, and the same structure has the same probability. The probability of the structure doesn't change, no matter whether I have discussed or keep, you see? Keep the dogs on the beach versus discuss the dogs on the beach is 0.15. So if we multiply these two together, we'll get 0.36. For discuss, we get the opposite effect than for keep. This structure, this flat structure, is this preferred versus I'm discussing, and the topic of my discussion are the dogs on the beach. In this case, discuss followed by a noun phrase is much more likely. We are discussing things. We are discussing the room, we are discussing the dogs and whatnot. It's much less likely that discuss will be followed by a noun phrase and a prepositional phrase. No, it's not. So the point here is, your colleague says, well, you know, the difference is not so big. No, but as long as you can get the right interpretation, it's fine. But yes, in reality, they're quite close. And in fact, the way you do the beam, it could be that you keep both analyses in your beam, i.e. you maintain them both. And this raises a very important point that has to do with probabilistic modeling. When differences get marginal, the error increases. So if you have minute differences in your probabilities, how do you choose? And this is often the case. And you know, you choose by the most likely analysis, but it may not be so bad to pick the second best or the third best or the fourth best. So people tend to model this by becoming more Bayesian, by introducing priors, and priors are things that you put on probabilities to make, to increase their effect, to make the magnitude bigger, so as not to get such small numbers, such small differences in the numbers. Okay, so this is the preferred reading, where we have the NP structure, and the NP and the PP are under the NP. Okay, so how do we model now the garden path effects? So the garden path is caused by what Jurafsky calls construction probabilities. Now, construction probabilities is really nothing but the phrase structure rules that the PCFG has. So here are your rules here. This is the sentence. So the complex houses. This is the reading where complex is an adjective and houses is a noun. Okay? And we would say the complex houses, blah, 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 and we expect something else to follow here. So these are the rules. This is the probability of this construction. It's quite high. The probability of the noun phrase. The noun goes to the root, okay? So the noun is followed by a sentence here. That's what this rule models. And the fact that the house is a noun and the adjective, the complex word is an adjective. If we multiply them all together, we get this number, which is the preferred reading. So this is higher from the dispreferred reading, which is the one where houses is the verb. And as you see here, we have a different analysis. S goes to NPVP. The complex is a noun phrase, and houses is a verb phrase. And if you multiply all these probabilities, and Jurafsky's model predicts all this, and at its time, it was revolutionary, because people could not model this. And the fact that he used the PCFG was a big deal at the time. Of course, the field has progressed since. We're like more than 10 years down the road. And the same with the warehouse fires. Same idea, except that we get the opposite effect. The warehouse fires here is preferred, as opposed to the warehouse fires is dispreferred. So whereas the verb is the fires is not a noun, but a verb. Okay? Now, finally, the beautiful garden path construction of the horse raced. So here we have both. We have both construction probabilities and frame probabilities. So the sentence, the horse raced, once we read it, before hearing anything else, the horse raced, we are assuming that the horse is doing the racing. And in this case, we have the probability of this tree, and race is usually attested with a noun phrase and nothing else. And this would be the preferred reading. Now, the other reading where the horse raced is a VP has a much less likely subcut frame. So when race is attested with two noun phrases, and if you multiply the probabilities, this will be dispreferred. And this is not rocket science. We count things in the corpus. We think about how to model the problem. We multiply them together, and hey presto, we get some good predictions about what a human would do in the same situation. And the same for find. I'm not going to go through all of this. It's in the lecture. Now, how does Jurafsky's model pick the right analysis? There is a crucial assumption here. If the relative probability of a tree falls down below a certain value, then it will be proved. And this is crucial because, remember, it has limited parallelism. So the idea is that it wants to get rid of some trees because the parser will have, you know, exponential growth of parse trees. So he has to find a way of getting rid of some analysis. And the problem is, how do you do this? So the idea is that we have a probability ratio of preferred versus dispreferred analysis, and we will count this probability ratio, and the assumption is that a garden path occurs if the probability ratio is higher than 5:1. So if the preferred analysis is more likely, the probability is higher, with a ratio of 5:1, then we have a garden path. So you can see some ratios here. The complex houses is very high, so we have a garden path. The horse raised very high. The warehouse fire is not that high, so we wouldn't garden path here. The bird found not very high. What do people think about this? Is it cognitively plausible to make such assumptions? Do we have in our brain something that tells us, well, if your probability ratio is higher than 5:1, then you garden path? So this isn't that great. So the model is fine, but the crucial assumption as to how you decide whether you have a garden path is kind of hacked into the model, really. The ratio, ideally, should be learned empirically rather than said by hand. Okay, clicker time. I will read this to you. Which one of the following frames is least likely for the verb drink? So this tests your own intuitions. And I will read out the sentences. The patient must drink several liters each day. We were up drinking all night. Let's drink to the new year. The mother drinks in every word of her son on the stage. Good. Yes. Drink in is actually a very implausible, or not implausible, but not very frequent frame for the verb drink. You drink in everything that somebody says. So, like a sieve. All right. We move on. Now, a couple of open issues, and I will let you go. Incrementality. Can we make more fine-grained predictions of the time course of ambiguity resolution? And this is for the psycholinguists out there. This is really still not incremental, right? We are computing the structure of the entire sentence. If anything, we are taking subtrees. It's not word for word. Coverage, big issue. Jurafsky used handcrafted examples. Can we use a parser that is trained on real corpus? So his PCFT probabilities were set by hand. People have done this subsequently. You know, you estimate the parser from the Pendry bank, and you do it lovely. Memory limitations, that's also important. Can you somehow augment the model to take this into account? That the fact that we don't have unlimited memory, we can't parse sentences like the cat, the mouse, chase, the man ate the cheese. These are the center embedding sentences we talked about a few lectures back. And finally, cross-linguistic validity, which comes back to the question that I was asked in the beginning of the lecture. Are garden paths valid for the entire languages of the world? And the question is, does this model, the way we model it, with construction probabilities and frame probabilities, work for languages other than English that may perhaps have different word orders? And I'll stop there. Tomorrow, different chapter, types of programming and natural languages. Are there any questions? Okay, off you go. Yes.
Well, I was thinking about these things. The puzzle would by word, but for example, with the woman and the dogs on the beach, right?
Yes.
So is that really, is it like that practical? Because if we are like a sentence before saying, the wives left their husbands at home with the children or something, then you know the woman on the beach talking about the dogs that are there.
That's a very good point. This is discourse, yes. And unfortunately, there aren't very many models that take this into account. So this is a very good point that, you know, the discourse would actually disambiguate this.
Well, yeah.
And you wouldn't garden path.
So is there anything like that in the course?
There is nothing like that in the course. And in fact, I will tell you there are no models that do this because this is very hard. How do you actually maintain this and whatever? But it's a research question. Now slowly people are doing it. So you're on the right track. You're on the right track. Anything? Any other questions?
What is going on? You know, in the complex houses, in that sentence, the complex is a noun, and houses should be a verb. That is the most probable thing, isn't it?
The complex
was a noun, yeah.
Houses.
These people.
But now that I told you, but when you read the sentence, I actually garden path. I tell you how to interpret these things, but it could be that, you know, the complex houses married, and then you garden path.
On the slide, you had that the dispreferred one was that one.
Yeah, that one, actually, yeah. I think
the dispreferred is the one where...
Well, the one complex was the noun first, and then houses was the verb,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, that's right.
How can that
be? How can it be dispreferred then?
Because you tend to interpret it as an adjective. Because there is more preference, but complex is more often an adjective rather than...
But then the sentence doesn't make sense.
Exactly, that's why you garden path. But this is exactly right. Yeah, that's...
Why do you keep saying that? I don't want to go to the garden.
See, the point is that humans don't often garden path because we have discourse. We have all this information that disambiguates it for us. But if you go to the lab and I give you this sentence, I guarantee that you will actually spend more time reading it, even though now you think you know, than not. So garden path shows us, for a moment, how the brain or whatever.
So in general, the first thing someone would think when reading that would be...
Well, yeah, and usually, you know, there's other things that disambiguate. There's like, you know, the context in which you are in.
Yeah,
so if I speak and I say, you know, if I say the students taught by, you will not think that the students teach. You will think that are taught because we are in a university and I'm the lecturer.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, but pathological sentences give us a grip at what is happening because with normal sentences, we can't, like, you know, psycholinguistics is you take pathology and you stretch it to the limit to have some conclusions. Because else, the other solution would be, you know, we go and we do an fMRI scan and we look at the brain. And the...
Yeah. So in real life, this doesn't...
This doesn't occur very often, yes. Yes. Okay.
Yeah, so, like, for the sentences, like the dogs and the beach and everything, so...
I mean, they're not meant to be funny. I don't know. I'm sure if somebody else gave a lecture, this would be serious. It's me. I'm sure. Anyway,
so,
yes.
Okay, it depends. If I'm reading a sentence in the book and I see the women walk on the whatever, I don't remember the sentence. I can guess because I know the context.
Right.
So, but... Otherwise, if I'm just thrown this sentence, there is no right and wrong.
There is no right, but you will use your defaults. So humans have defaults about what is more likely. If I tell you the word date, what does it mean? Out of context.
Like,
you will think, let's have a date. Or will you think the date of the week? or will you think date is a fruit? no one thinks the date is a fruit.
Yeah.
Because you have You have intuitions about these things.
But maybe it depends if like to what I've been exposed. So for example,
Yes.
So it's okay.
Yes, of course. But you know, it's interesting that with just probabilities that we get from a corpus, that somebody that knows nothing about psycholinguistics, we can actually model these things. It is kind of impressive.
Okay, I get it. Yeah. So it doesn't. Yeah. Sorry.
So hold on. Do you have a question?
I had a question.
Yes, because you asked me one question already.
Brain probabilities. How is that different than head lexicalizing something?
It's a good point. The frame probabilities are a precursor to head lexicalization. It's less general. That's a very good question, because head lexicalization will lexicalize everything. Frame probabilities are verb specific. And in modern versions, we don't call them frame probabilities. We just say we have a lexicalized PCFT, and we take all this. But you know, this was all. But this is a very good question. Very good question. Yes?
The distinction between garden paths and just ambiguous sentences.
Yes.
For example,
not all ambiguous sentences give garden paths, though. So not all ambiguous sentences make you read them longer. These are extremely bad. So you get higher reading times.
An example which I saw on the Facebook yesterday.
Okay.
As a joke. It was the woman without her man is nothing, and you can structure it in three ways. A woman without her man is nothing, and a woman without her man is nothing.
Oh, without punctuation.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be a garden path.
Yeah, but it's different than the prime number few. It's different. It's like I guess it's a different type or something.
It's a different type.
And that, as I understood, you gave us three types of garden paths.
There may be others. I think the psycholinguistic definition is a garden path is a structure where we have reading difficulty. If I ran an eye tracking experiment, I would see increased reading time than as opposed to a sentence that actually disambiguates.
Okay.
Right? So the horse raced past the barn fell takes more time as opposed to the horse that raced past the barn fell.
Okay. You should check the article in Wikipedia about the garden paths, because I'm not sure if things you say here.
So the lectures that. Well, fine.
With that,
but I don't think
the
Wikipedia is right.
No,
because
the slides
are based on Frank, and Frank does psycholinguistics. These are not my slides.
Yeah, I mean,
you should
update Wikipedia, not your slides.
Frank should update, because I don't do psycholinguistics, you see. Okay, all right.
Thanks.
No problemo.
Yes. Probability ratios. What is that?
So you get the ratio of the preferred versus the dispreferred reading, and then you see how much bigger the one over the other is.
So if there's multiple.
It's a multiple, yes.
Then you.
So you divide. You divide one by the other, and if it's anything more than five, if you divide and it comes, you know, 10 to 1, it means that it's really like very high, and so you will prune that analysis.
So that means it's not very probable.
Yes.
Okay.
Exactly. And I didn't explain that right. I mean, correct. Okay. Bye, guys. Bye.
No, it's interesting, it's getting better after. This course is getting a bit more interesting. After Python, it's interesting for me.
After
Python, yeah, I'm interested in more.
After formal stuff.
Dude, how do people process language probably?
No, we don't. We try to model. We try to model.
Every
time
we
model.
You have a computer that adding machines, you need numbers.
Again, like Warcraft, why can't you just look at the sentence before and check for the same ones? Be like, okay, that's the content.
I don't get that.
If you're talking about the dogs and the beaches, then, you know, in this previous sentence, then, you know, in the next sentence, you don't talk.
Yeah. I talked about the
grammar.
Why can't
they do that?
But you know,
okay, well, how do you remember context? What do you do to remember context or situation?
You store it in a thing.
Where? What do you store? which piece of information do you store? Like, women are leaving? What do you store exactly?
Well, if you see something that you think you're going to put down,
and then they're getting matched all the time. We don't know how we do that yet. So they're trying to, okay, like for example, like I said, if you say
yeah,
the wise
are
man,
okay, that's
exactly, we are the ship. You know, stupid dog on top of his head.
It's like, every time you have like an algorithm or something, somebody's like, oh, this is great, this is awesome, it works so well. And then at the end of the lecture, it's like, yeah, but nobody uses it.
Okay, that's what
I was
so
surprised when she's like, my address is a good friend.
Yeah, it's a bit nepotism. You know, and like, oh, okay. That looks a good guy, plays a sock, like, oh, whoa. Really good friend of you. Really good friend of you. You know?
She said so many funny things.
Yeah, no,
I wish
it was
all
funny.
I would have